Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, it's Wednesday the 10th of September. Hope you're okay and thank you for downloading today's podcast. We've got plenty to get through this episode, including fears over the amount of illegal meat coming into the county, and it's possible direct trains could be running from Sheerness to London for the first time in almost 40 years. But first, taking a look at our top story today, and this news broke just earlier this morning. Two universities in Kent are set to merge in a move that's come as a shock to thousands of staff and students. Nicola joins me now with all the details.
So, Kate, a statement from the University of Kent that's been sent out to staff today announces plans for a formal collaboration with the University of Greenwich. It goes on to say the partnership will lead to the creation of something known as the London and Southeast University Group. Now, it would be the first multi-university group of its kind. However, both unis would keep their individual names. However, it would mark the end of Kent's 60-year history as a standalone institution. It was established back in 1965 and started that year with just 500 students.
And can you give us a bit more info about the unis and why this merger is happening?
Well, both institutions have campuses in Medway, while the University of Kent's main campus, as you may know, is in Canterbury, and Greenwich, you can probably tell by its name, has its main site in South London. Now, Kent employs more than 3,000 people and has around 16,000 students at the moment, but it's been under financial pressure in recent years, and a major redundancy programme was launched to help plug a £12 million deficit. It's also recently dropped courses being offered, including art history, journalism and music. On the flip side to that, Greenwich is in a much stronger financial position. In fact, the latest figures show it had £146 million in the bank and assets of £360 million. It's also much bigger, about 26,000 students study there. Now, although the collaboration isn't being described as a full merger, it is understood both universities will be overseen by a single vice-chancellor and top management team.
And do we know who that vice-chancellor will be and when all of this will be in place?
Well, today's statement says the role of what would be called founding vice-chancellor will be held by Professor Jane Harrington. She's currently in charge of the University of Greenwich. The statement goes on to say that nothing actually changes today, but it adds a phase of detailed financial and legal due diligence is underway, and that's due to be completed by the end of the year. So, in theory, the new group could be in place when students start their studies at the beginning of the 2026-27 academic year.
Thanks, Nicola. As we're recording today's podcast, more and more details are coming out. To help unpack it all, we've spoken to Tudor Price, who is the chief executive of the Kent Invicta Chamber of Commerce.
I don't think this comes as a surprise for those that have been involved with HE and FE provision, universities and colleges in and around the county. It's been well documented some of the financial challenges that universities are under because of student numbers and also sort of changes in the student fees. But I think that this is a smart preemptive move that I think was something that's probably on the cards. And we think probably conversations have been going on for a little while in the background. So I appreciate it probably come as a surprise to many, but those that are sort of more closely involved in this particular sector and the provision of education and skills will know that something had to happen. It couldn't carry on the way it is. So I think this is a smart move and quite preemptive.
If we look at the finances, University of Kent struggling somewhat, University of Greenwich in a much better financial position. So for the Uni of Kent, this sounds like it's the way to go, does it? It sounds like a very smart move on their behalf.
Yeah, I think that there's been some very candid conversations have taken place, obviously, within the Vice-Chancellor's office. And yeah, there was a clear need to make some sort of arrangement or to take some action. And I think this will prove to be the right one for the long term. It's really about merging the back offices, isn't it? I think, you know, you can see the obvious cost savings to be had by bringing these two universities together. There's a lot of synergy and similarity. Obviously, they share a campus up in Medway, you know, and there's sort of some interesting sort of cross-disciplinary interest
and
things.
Yeah, and as far as the universities individually are concerned, it's made it very clear in the statement, they will keep their brands, they will keep their names. So for students, I guess not a huge amount will change. How important is it for Kent to keep a University of Kent and to keep that identity?
It's absolutely critical. Current challenges notwithstanding, there is absolutely a need to try and improve productivity, upskill the labour force, for the county. For the future, really, we've all seen obviously the advent of AI and more technology, the need for a high wage, high skilled economy. The fewer number of people coming in, so in terms of population, so we need those people that are working age, to be smarter and earning more. And of course, that puts us in a global position as well. So the fact that we have three universities, and will continue to have so, obviously, bar, back office changes, is really key. Now, one of the other things we're seeing, of course, is a movement towards apprenticeships, but high-level apprenticeships. That's going to be quite key for the Kent economy because of the way in which we work with a lot of professional services and sort of high-tech, high advanced manufacturing. So the high-level apprenticeships can only really be delivered through universities effectively, and therefore, I'm hoping that this merger will allow even more flexibility and a more tailored response to the needs here in the county. So, details obviously yet to come out, but overall, I think this is probably a good strategic move.
And you mentioned, of course, we have three universities in Kent, Canterbury, Christchurch being the other. Are they going to feel a little bit out on a limb at the moment?
I wouldn't blame them if they did, actually. It's a tough one. I do hope that they've been involved in some of the conversations. I certainly don't know whether they have or not. Christchurch fortunately has some very sort of unique disciplines, and it has a very unique offer. So I'd like to think that that will actually stand in good stead. But yeah, we've got to be making sure that we don't leave them out in the cold. They are an important part of the economy. They do obviously a lot around health and education. So that a really part important part of what we do here in Kent. So yeah, hopefully they'll be included in the conversation moving forward. But yeah, it must be a very worrying time for them.
We'll be following this story across the day. Head to Kent Online and click on the story on our main page for all the latest updates.
Kent Online News.
Also making news today, French officials say three asylum seekers have died and three others are missing in the English Channel. Two children are reportedly among those who lost their lives. It comes just a day after a woman died while trying to reach the UK in a small boat. Elsewhere, asylum seekers held at a processing centre in Thanet have launched legal action following reports of poor conditions. Nearly 200 people have submitted claims against the Home Office, saying their stay at the Manston site impacted their human rights. It comes after concerns about overcrowding during a period of high capacity in 2022. A sex offender from Medway who was found with hundreds of illegal images of children has been jailed for more than 2 years. A court heard Hayden Sheard broke an earlier order to tell police about any internet-enabled devices he owned. The 27-year-old from Sundridge Drive was found with a mobile phone during a visit to his home in April. Children have been left covered in glass after a brick was thrown at their taxi on the school run. A window shattered when it happened in Marden on Monday morning. The vehicle was travelling towards Staplehurst at the time. A man who launched a nasty and intimidating stalking campaign against his partner in Sheerness has been spared jail. A court heard Marcus Sprawling repeatedly let himself into his victim's home and smashed her TV, a hallway mirror and ripped furniture. The 35-year-old from Alden Road in Ingatestone in Essex was ordered to carry out unpaid work, pay £2,000 and is subject to a 10-year restraining order. A Folkestone man has avoided prison after being caught riding his son's e-scooter while under the influence. Lee Shrivel was stopped by officers in Cheriton Road after nearly crashing into members of the public. He tested positive for cocaine and morphine. The 46-year-old who lives in Bigginswood Road had previously been banned from the road for drug driving offences. He's been given a 12-month suspended sentence, been ordered to carry out 240 hours of unpaid work and been banned from driving for 60 months. Now, a Maidstone man is in a critical condition in hospital after a sneeze triggered multiple strokes and a bleed on the brain. Luke Savage had been suffering headaches for a week, which turned out to be the result of two large blood clots. His condition deteriorated after he sneezed in Costco on August 30th. The 23-year-old's family say he's got irreversible brain damage and are fundraising to help with his rehab.
Kent Online News.
A group of MPs say alarming amounts of meat and dairy products are being illegally imported in the UK and the facilities at the port of Dover to seize them aren't adequate. A new report says the issue has been getting worse in recent years and could lead to an outbreak of animal diseases like foot and mouth. Hugh Richards is from the National Farmers Union and is also a Biddenden farmer.
If there was an outbreak for us in the UK, it would be tragic, devastating, rural communities, farmers, everybody, because if you look back to 2001 and what it cost private and public sector then, it was 5.2 for the private sector and £8.6 billion for the public sector. So if we've got, as EFRA's report has come out and said, a facility at Dover for one that isn't fit for purpose, they've got plastic roofs, pigeons nesting, no wash facilities, they've got now PPE, I gather. But what incentive is that for people to work? So if they could actually upgrade that facility, infuse the staff, have somebody in charge who took responsibility for what's going on, then you'd be able to track a lot more of this meat and stop it. But if we don't, the amount it's going to cost our economy will render the upgrade cost totally insignificant.
Well, this report found that in the Port of Dover alone, the amount of illegal meat that they found increased from 13 tonnes between January and April 2023 to 70 tonnes for the same period in 2025. What's your reaction to those statistics there, Hugh?
When you've got the chair of EFRA, Alistair Carmichael, saying that every day vans laden with undeclared, unhygienic and unrefrigerated meat are rolling through our ports for distribution and sale in Britain, the authorities tasked with tackling the wave of illegal produce find themselves without the necessary leadership, resources and intelligence to do so. So that's Alistair Carmichael's finding, and he's the chairman of EFRA. It's pretty damning as to what's going on, and we need in the rural community, in the farming community especially, to know that our futures are safeguarded and that we're not going to be hit with this illegal import, which could possibly cause another foot and mouth or swine flu and further avian influenza.
Does this put your livelihood at risk?
Oh, absolutely. It puts it completely at risk, and people recovered after the 2001 outbreak. But if it happened this time, there are so many less livestock in the rural community and so many less farmers concentrating on livestock that I doubt that they would recover. And the age demographic, if you are over 65, 70, going on to 80, are you going to restock? Are you going to take it on again? Not only that, but the mental health issues and the feelings of the countryside and the camaraderie and everything else will be shredded. And mental health will be on the floor. It's already bad now with all the other things that are hitting farming with inheritance tax and other taxes, APP, PPR and such like, that we will be in a devastating state.
And just explain to viewers, you're a livestock farmer yourself down in Bindon. What is actually the danger? What's different about this illegal meat, or the potential difference about this illegal meat which is coming through our ports compared to something that you may produce?
The fact is, you don't know where it's going to end up. You don't know who's handling it. You don't know whether some of it, because it's illegal and covered up, is going to end up in an animal food chain. And if you get some of that waste disposed of that ends up with animals, there's your outbreak straight away. And it could be devastating. Whereas livestock that's come through the recognised abattoirs with all the inspections that go with it and all the huge costs that go along with it are relatively safe. And the biggest problem, the other biggest problem is that we're getting quite good value for money now for sheep and cattle. And so therefore, the margins for people who are bringing in illegal meat is far greater. And so far, they can take bigger risks. And if the smugglers can smuggle humans across the channel in boats that need feed, water and keeping alive, it's very easy for the smugglers to organise cases of meat to come through undetected in the floors of trailers and such like. And if the facilities at Dover aren't capable of even inspecting enough vehicles as it is, how are they ever going to catch it?
The government says they're investing £200 million in a new national biosecurity centre and will consider the recommendations of the report. Another Kent councillor has defected to a different political party. It's the second time it's happened this week. David Knight has left the Tunbridge Wells Alliance and joined the Conservatives. He said he wants to work with a party that can deliver across the whole borough and wider Weald. A new report into Kent's climate has revealed we're in for hotter summers and warmer, wetter winters. The Kent and Medway Local Nature Recovery Strategy paper suggests the changes will bring new pests and diseases and coastal erosion. Council say they have plans to help combat the impacts, including using nature-based solutions and increasing connectivity of high-quality habitats. New data has revealed the number of complaints to water companies covering Kent last year. Southern had more than 14,000, while South East Water had around 4,700. Thames recorded the highest figure with nearly 70,000 complaints. Over Overall, the number of issues brought to the consumer watchdog across the country has reached its highest level in 9 years. Former MasterChef presenter Greg Wallace from Kent is launching legal action against the BBC after he was sacked from the show. The case has been filed at the High Court, but no further details have been made public. The 60-year-old, who lives in Bidenden, was let go in July after a report upheld more than 40 allegations about his conduct.
Kent Online News.
Direct trains from Sheerness to London could make a return for the first time in almost 40 years. Since the late 80s, you've had to get off at Sittingbourne and wait for a connection to the capital. Now, Southeastern is in the early stages of looking at carrying out a trial to see if a service is popular. Joe Crossley has been speaking to Sittingbourne and Sheppey MP Kevin McKenna.
Well, we used to have direct trains from Sheerness on C Station all the way through to London. They haven't been running for the last few years. It looks like, I mean, I would push very strongly for us to get those trains running back again. And I know loads of people on the island want to see that happen too.
Do we have any idea of what that trial could maybe look like?
So speaking to Southeastern, they have been looking at seeing whether they can run trains in the middle of the week, in the mornings and the evenings. It would only be a few trains a day. It may only be one train a day in each direction to start off with. It's really to test to see whether people would use that service. I mean, from my point of view, this would be great. Let's, you know, start where we can and then see if we can build up.
Why would it be good for Sheerness firstly and the whole of the island as well?
I think everyone who lives on the island, who lives nearby, knows that transport around here is really challenging and it takes a long time to get off and on the island. And it's what's really important is how people can access work and employment. And just being able to get out to London expands the number of jobs and opportunities for local people that they could take. I think it's got this sort of double whammy for the island in terms of if people are working in, you know, able to get higher paid jobs, they'll be spending more money in the community here. But also, Sheerness on Sea, I mean, the clue's in the name, it is a seaside resort if it's nothing, you know. It will be really great so that people can actually easily get onto the island in the summer, enjoy our fantastic beaches. If we're going to rebuild this town, really build it up, then we need to reconnect it to London, reconnect it to the economic engine of the country. And that's what will boost things around here.
Kent Online News.
Plans have emerged for the biggest ever solar farm in Kent, with local residents describing it as a monster. Panels could be installed on land the size of 1,500 football pitches in Lydd on Romney Marsh. Bosses say it would produce enough electricity to power around 20% of all homes in Kent. An initial consultation on the South Brooks proposal will open next Thursday. Plans have been submitted to build 135 homes on an area of brownfield land in Folkestone. The council say they want to bring the former Ship Street Gasworks back into use. The authority bought the land in 2021. We're told more than a fifth of properties there would be affordable. There are plans to turn an historic pub in New Romney into housing. The landlord of the Plough Inn says it's running at a loss due to rising bills and a lack of customers. The applicants want to turn the three-storey building into two homes. A decision is due later this year.
Kent Online News.
On Suicide Prevention Day, the Kent Online podcast has been hearing how the Baton of Hope coming to the county this month will help to reduce stigma. It'll be carried to landmarks including Rochester Castle, Maidstone United Football Club and Margate's Dreamland in 12 days' time. This is the second time the Baton event has happened after being started by two dads who lost their son. Alice Scutchy is part of the organising committee.
We just had day 5 yesterday in Bradford. Just been following it along on social media and seeing how all the different communities sort of put their stamp on the day. It's just been really fascinating to watch, and just knowing what we've got planned in Kent and Medway as well just makes me feel really excited to show off everything that our county has to offer.
For anyone who hasn't heard of the Baton of Hope, I'm sure, like you, I'm seeing it a lot on my socials at the moment, so I'm sure people are seeing it and thinking, that looks like the Olympic torch. What's this all about? Explain it to us. What's the meaning behind it?
Yeah, so the Baton of Hope, it's a suicide prevention and awareness charity, and it was started by two dads that lost their son, sadly, to suicide. Now, they wanted to create a legacy and to really kind of challenge the status quo, do something different to bring those suicide rates down, because as we know, they have stagnated now for a number of years. So they came up with this idea of something physical, because obviously, like you said, with the Olympic torch, this is a physical symbol we have for physical health, really. So the Baton of Hope is the first in the world, we think, that's a physical symbol for mental well-being. So it's something people can hold, they can touch and carry, and really kind of, yeah, pass it on to each other, which is what HOPE is all about. So that's kind of where the idea came from. And it's just grown and grown and grown since it was created.
And it's going to be travelling over quite a large part of the county, lots of different baton bearers, and they all have incredible stories, don't they? And there's a reason why they're going to be walking with the baton on the day.
Yeah, so the response from the local residents and especially the baton bearers that applied has just been incredible, and just really inspiring to see, you know, the whole community come together. So we've got over 130 baton bearers on the Kent and Medway leg. So it's going to be a really kind of precious day for everyone, especially those who have experienced loss. So a lot of the baton bearers, you know, I've got deeply personal reasons for wanting to carry the baton, but a lot of those are people that are bereaved by suicide. And, you know, without them being brave and having that strength to kind of share their story and their journey with us, there wouldn't be a tour. So, yeah, incredibly brave. And yeah, I think that kind of strength just really gives hope to others as well.
And it's really kind of making a powerful statement, isn't it, to speak and to talk and to share these stories to try and, as you say, to prevent losing people in future. How important is it that we do start to have those conversations, as awkward as they may feel? We might feel that we don't want to start that conversation, but how important is it that we have them?
Yeah, and that's the advice I always give to anyone that, you know, if they're suicidal, is just speak to someone, anyone. It doesn't have to be a mental health professional. It could just be a friend, could be a colleague, could be a family member. But please don't keep thoughts to yourself. I've been there personally. It's a very, very dark place. And the longer you keep those feelings bottled up, the worse it gets. So, yeah, honestly, just reach out, tell someone how you're feeling. And I think, in my opinion, the rest comes later in terms of kind of that practical advice and practical support for recovery. But yeah, my advice is always just talk to someone, tell someone. And if you're on the other end of that, please listen to that person. You know, no judgment. There's no need to fix someone's problems or fix anything. It's just letting that person, you know, feel safe in opening up to you. And like I said, the rest really can wait. I think having that initial difficult conversation, like you said, is where I think lives will be saved.
And you can see the Baton of Hope route through Kent and Medway by heading to batonofhopekentandmedway.co.uk. There's also a link on the events pages to the Evening of Hope taking place at Margate's Dreamland following the end of the relay. The Princess of Wales is going to make a visit to Kent this week. Kate's set to tour Marina Mill in Cuxton tomorrow as part of a day of engagements to celebrate the British textiles industry. Kensington Palace said the visit would celebrate unique skill, creativity and craftsmanship. And a new multimedia art trail has launched in Dover. It's been funded by the European Space Agency and uses GPS and QR codes to send unique works inspired by the local landscape to your phone. You can find more info about it at the Towns Museum, the Western Heights, Seafront and Biggin Street.
Kent Online Sports.
Football Now, and former Gravesend schoolboy Mark Gaye scored a goal for England in their World Cup qualifying match last night. They beat Serbia 5-0, putting them in complete control of their group. Gaye scored in the 75th minute. There were also goals from Harry Kane, Noni Madueke, Ezri Konsa and Marcus Rashford. And briefly to cricket, Kent have a lead over Lancashire going into day three of their county championship match. The visitors were bowled out for 284 at Canterbury yesterday. Kent are due to resume today on 96 without loss in their second innings. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Kate Faulkner, all one word, at the checkout, you can get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.